of Sensational Years with Quinn Ryan. For 25 years, Quinn Ryan has told into radio microphones the stories of the world's most stirring events, from the actual scene or the broadcasting studios. Tonight, the American Broadcasting Company presents another in the series of dramatic memories of great news stories by the versatile radio reporter and commentator, Quinn Ryan. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, a great disaster at sea. As we proceed, you may recall the headlines in our radio accounts. And certainly you will recall the news photograph of a man on a slanting ship's deck, a life buoy around his body, and panic on his face. Let us roll back the years and their milestone events to this one.
1938.
That was the year when John Ward horrified New York City by standing on a 17th floor window ledge for 11 hours before jumping to his death.
1935.
That was the year when Huey Long was assassinated at the Louisiana State Capitol, and his assailant was killed by guards.
1928.
That was the year when we were humming Sweet Sue, and Lover Come Back to Me, and I'll Get By. 'Twas the year when the Kellogg Treaty Against War was signed in Paris. And that was the year when I broadcast the Republican National Convention from Kansas City, which nominated Herbert Hoover and Charles Curtis, and the Democratic Convention from Houston, which nominated Alfred E. Smith and Joseph T. Robinson. And Oscars were won in the movie world by Janet Gaynor in Seventh Heaven and by Emile Jannings in The Way of All Flesh. And 1928 was the year when a gallant queen of the seas, whose name is familiar to you all, stood proudly at her berth in New York Harbor, ready to sail out upon a voyage that was tagged for disaster. It's noon of Saturday, November 9th, 1928, only 10 minutes before sailing time. It's surprisingly warm and bright for this season of the year, and the sun shines down on massive ship funnels that are already belching smoke from pulsating engines and upon crowds of people who swarm the adjoining pier. The atmosphere is typical of most sailings: color, excitement, a little anxiety, tears and farewells, but most of all, just plain joy. This is adventure. And though we know only disaster lies ahead, none of its shadows have yet fallen upon the actual participants of the scene. A standout among the passengers about to embark is the young couple just approaching. The young man walks proudly. He can't seem to take his eyes off the girl beside him. Neither can most of the other people. For even without the flowers on her shoulder, the excited flush on her cheeks, it doesn't take much guessing to know their story.
Oh, Jim, darling, I feel so silly. Everybody's staring at me.
Oh, let them stare, honey. From the looks of most of those guys, I bet they'd give a right arm to be where I am now, with the prettiest bride there ever was, and two tickets for a honeymoon and a swell new job in Buenos Aires.
Is that the boat we're going to take?
Oh, don't call it a boat, honey. It's a ship, and a doggone fine one at that. You know, I was reading all about her in the folder. She weighs 10,400 tons. She's 495 feet long. That's the equivalent of 2.5 city blocks, Martha. She's been in service 16 years, and she's what they call a floating luxury resort. And it's all ours, Martha. At least while we're on it. Won't it be fun?
Yes, I'm sure it'll be fun.
Well, what's the matter, honey? You sound worried. Is it because the gang didn't come down to see us off?
Well, that partly, but... Oh, Jim, I might as well admit it. I've never been on a boat before.
Ah, ship, honey.
Oh, I mean ship. I guess I'm kind of scared, that's all. I've always sort of enjoyed the feeling of being on solid ground. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure. But you'll love this. I just know you will.
You think it's perfectly safe?
Safe? Why, honey, you couldn't sink a ship like this if you tried.
No.
goes the last blast. We'd better be getting aboard.
Oh, wait, Jim, wait. I think that's Dad over there coming towards us.
Huh? Well, sure enough, so it is. Oh, here we are, Mr. West, over
Dad!
Here.
Oh, Dad!
Yeah, I wonder where the others are. How come he's all alone?
Jim. Oh, Martha. Jim. I'm so late.
You were swell to come down far away.
Where's Mother and the whole gang?
Well, they couldn't make it, dear. We had a bit of trouble on the way.
Trouble? What happened?
3 carloads of us were coming down to see you off. We had it all planned. We wanted to surprise you.
What happened?
But the car your mother was in...
Oh, Dad, she wasn't in an accident.
Yes. She was pretty badly shaken up.
Oh, no.
They've got her at Anderson Hospital now. The others are all right, though,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, no, Dad, why aren't you with her? Why did you come?
Well, we both thought it best. We were afraid you might see something about it in the papers and worry even more. I'm going right back.
Oh, what'll we do? We can't go if Mother's hurt.
Well, honey, if we don't get on that ship now, it's goodbye to my new job in Buenos Aires. Oh, gosh, Father West, I hate to go like this. What do you think we should do?
You go along. I'll take care of Mother. But you'd better hurry before they get that gangplank all the way up.
But, Dad, we're going so far away. Maybe we couldn't get back in time.
No, she'll be perfectly all right, Martha. Now, go on, hurry. I'll send you a cable if anything goes wrong.
All right. We'll do as you say, but I don't like this. I don't like it at all. I've got the funniest feeling Mother's accident is an omen. A warning that we shouldn't go on this boat.
An omen could be, if you believe in such things. Jim and Martha Ricker would surely believe if they could see ahead as we can. They would not be standing as they are now, just outside their cabin, on the upper deck of this doomed ship as she points southward through the waters of the Atlantic. As they stare over the rail, down into the foam of the incessantly churning waves, the sun on their backs, their whole world a vast open sea, the thrill of the moment captures them. Even Martha is beginning to feel a sense of security. The ship is huge, strong. Surely nothing can halt her steady, confident progress. From bow to stern, this ship is a living, pulsating thing, a veritable queen of the sea.
Jim, your boat is beautiful, very beautiful. I'm sorry I acted the way I did. I didn't know it'd be like this.
You do like it, honey. You feel better now?
Oh, much better. I have an easier feeling about going away.
Oh, that's good.
With Dad there, I'm sure Mother will be all right.
Sure she will. Now, try not to worry too much. This is supposed to be our honeymoon, remember?
I'll remember. I guess there never was a luckier girl than I am. There never will be. Oh, kiss me, darling.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Oh,
hello, I guess we didn't see you there.
I'm sorry if I disturbed anything.
That's quite all right.
Honeymooners, no doubt?
Who, us? Oh, gosh, no. We've been married for years, haven't we, honey?
Oh, of course we have.
Sure.
Well, being fellow travelers, I suppose I should introduce myself. My name's Brighton, Sylvester Brighton.
Well, how do you do? I'm Jim Ricker, and this is Mrs. Ricker.
How do you do?
How do you do, Mrs. Ricker? Mr. Ricker. Your first ocean voyage, no doubt?
Oh, no. We've traveled all over the world, haven't we, honey?
Oh, my, yes. We've just lived on boats all our lives.
Is that so? Then you must have noticed, as I have, the peculiar thing about this ship.
Oh, what do you mean, Mr. Brighton?
Take a look forward, where I'm pointing with my cane. You see the captain's bridge, which extends straight across the ship, from port to starboard?
Yeah, go on.
All right. Now fix your eyes on the horizon line. The sea is quite calm. The ship is quite steady. There's practically no roll whatsoever. Now, do you notice what I am getting at?
No, I don't think I do. Now, if you'll excuse us, Mr. Brighton, I'm afraid my wife and I just remembered a date to play shuffleboard.
Oh, Jim, what is it? I don't see anything.
Oh, it's nothing at all. Come on, honey.
But you do see something, don't you? What is it?
I'm very sorry. You're quite right, young man. There's no use disturbing your wife. Well, guess we are in for a bit of wind, aren't we? And perhaps a storm. Well, was ever thus as we seasoned travelers know.
The warm sunlight fades as the afternoon progresses. Out of nowhere, a wind appears, leaving in its wake little ripples that gradually mount into rolling waves. The wind is in a playful mood, seeming to save its real strength until later when it might be needed. It finds the proud queen of the seas, plays with her a bit, slaps a few preliminary waves against her, sends its first shock troops down her decks, driving the more timid of her passengers to the security of the enclosed lounges and smoking rooms. And as darkness falls, the wind still plays its little game, registering its presence with an uncomfortable sharpness upon the minds of the passengers who are now gathered in the dining saloon.
Come on, honey, you haven't eaten a thing. Aren't you hungry?
Jim, could we talk about something else besides food? That is, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure, sure. Maybe you'd like to go back to the cabin. Would that be better, dear?
Oh, no, no. It's much too pretty here. I love the crowds and the music.
It's just like the Biltmore or the Ritz, huh? Not that we've ever been in those places, of course, but just look at that paneling. Did you ever see anything so beautiful? And the carpets are so soft, you practically sink down to your knees in them.
Jim, I can't get it out of my mind. What was Mr. Brighton talking about?
Oh, honey, not that again.
Tell me, Jim. It isn't fair enough to tell me.
Oh, okay. Well, I must say the whole thing is crazy. So is Brighton, for that matter. He's a false alarmist if I ever saw one.
Please, Jim.
Well, the old goof just happened to notice that the line of the captain's bridge and the line of the horizon weren't parallel, that's all. Doesn't mean a thing. I doubt if one ship in a million ride perfectly level.
You mean the boat tips to one side?
A little, yes. Oh. But that could be due to a lot of things. Maybe the cargo isn't loaded evenly on both sides. You know, we're really carrying quite a bit of stuff. I was asking the steward about it just before dinner, and he says we have a cargo of 6,000 tons. We've got automobiles, farm machinery, silk, cotton, and barrels of lubricating oil. Plus, mind you, over 1,000 sacks of mail. How's that?
Oh, Jim, you're wonderful. How do you ever remember so many things?
Oh, you didn't know your husband was a walking encyclopedia, did you? But in my line of business, we've got...
What happened?
Where are you?
Over here, Jim! What happened?
Must have been a wave. Hit us amidships. Are you okay?
Oh, Jim, I'm scared. Why did they turn the lights on?
Now, take it easy, honey. Take it easy. There's nothing to be scared of. The electric system's probably gone on the blink. That's all. Just sit quietly here with me for a moment by this wall. We'll be all right.
Oh, I wish I could see. This is awful just sitting here.
Say, they're getting an oil lamp lighted over there by the captain's table. Holy smoke, Martha. Look at the stuff all over the floor. And the people.
Your attention, please. Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. Captain Carey has asked me to assure you that there is no cause for alarm. Due to a minor repair required in one of our engines, we've been laying hold to in the trough of the wave. However, we are certain no damage has been done, and as soon as possible, we shall proceed upon our course. We sincerely regret any inconveniences and uneasinesses which this situation has caused, and hope you will bear with us until we are once more underway.
There, you see, honey? There's nothing to be worried about. They'll get the lights on and the jiffy, and we'll be sailing along again, as good as ever.
Hope so.
Sure.
I wish I had the confidence you've got in the boat.
Ship, honey, ship. Say, since you never can get it right, why don't you call her by her name?
I never can remember. What is it again?
Oh, honey, it's the Vestris, remember?
The Vestris. Who doesn't remember the name of that ill-fated ship? The broadcasts we did hour after hour? The headlines that flashed across the world in November 1928? The sensational reports that crowded the front pages? The prolonged investigations to determine the mysterious circumstances of her disaster? The Vestris. What a vital significance that name has today. How little it meant to those aboard her then, who did not yet know that they were about to be tagged for death. The Vestris has once again resumed her course. A whirl unto herself, she slips through the night, her lights flickering in the darkness, her engines throbbing. The wind is fighting her now, releasing more and more of its fury, hurling rain and fog and giant waves against her. Within, there is little sleep for those whose lives are entrusted to her safekeeping. Fear has come aboard now, fear and mounting terror. Martha Ricker stares wide-eyed at the ceiling of her cabin, listening, thinking.
I'll go crazy if I listen to that wind and rain any longer. I know something's wrong with this boat. I know it. Oh, Jim, I'm so afraid.
And in the darkness, Jim Ricker, too, lies thinking.
I wonder if Martha's noticed how we're listing now. Those curtains aren't even lying flat against the portholes anymore. Is this ship dangerous?
Dragging hours of sleeplessness, worry, mounting tension. Then a gray light sweeps the storm-tormented sea, and it's morning. Life aboard ship is once again resumed, but most of the passengers do not leave their cabins. Only five appear in the dining saloon for breakfast, only four for luncheon and four for dinner. They all seem to be waiting, waiting for something that is still only a suspicion rather than an actuality. They reason there is nothing to be afraid of. Certainly ships have been known to list before. Certainly there have been worse storms at sea than this. Certainly it's just a rumor that the furniture in the public rooms has slid to the starboard side, that the engines sound irregular, almost feeble. Yes, they reason all this, but fear is with them now, fear that goes beyond reason, fear that even finds expression in the conversation between Captain Carey and one of his officers.
Captain! Captain!
Yes? What is it, Commander?
I've just come from below. Our chief engineer has found four or five leaks. He thinks there may be more. The sea is forcing its way to the coal bunkers.
What are they doing to stop it?
Just about everything they can. Every available man is down there with the pumps bailing. But they can't seem to get ahead of it.
Why not?
Water is coming in under two of the working doors. They can't get at the leaks because coal is piled in bunkers against those doors.
Tell them to do the best they can. If they close off a couple of the bulkheads, they may be able to control the ingress of water.
The stormy night, the Queen of the Seas carries on along her lonely course, her destiny and the destinies of those aboard her guided by the judgment of one man. He is a good captain, this man Carey, backed by years of experience upon the seas, thoroughly aware of his responsibility to his passengers, equally aware of the fate which can befall any captain if a board of inquiry should hold his judgment was wrong. Below, the engines pulsate in monotonous rhythm, driving the Vestris on and on, while frantic members of her crew work feverishly through the long hours to hold back the water, which slowly but stubbornly creeps ahead, defying resistance, unalterably driving toward its ultimate goal. You can be unaware of a sound while it's in existence, but the moment it stops...
Martha!
What is it?
I don't know whether I dreamed it or what. I think the engines have stopped. Listen, see if you can hear them. Martha, they have stopped. I think we'd better get our things together and get out on deck.
Oh, Jim, this whole room's tipping. There's water against the porthole, and it's here along the wall.
She must have tipped even more during the night. I don't think we have a moment to lose. Get dressed as quick as you can.
You're not frightened, Jim.
No, only I wonder why there hasn't been any alarm or warning. Yes, what is it?
All women and children on upper deck.
Get a move on, honey.
They won't try to separate us. I won't go up there without you.
We'll see. Come on now. We better do as they say.
In the early light of dawn, in the raging winds and rains, the half-dressed, bewildered passengers rush from their cabins to the upper decks of the Vestris. She is caught in the trough of the seas now, helpless, her engines crippled by the rising waters in her hold. She is drifting dangerously, lying on her beam ends, her lower starboard decks already underwater. Men, women, and children stand about helplessly, fastening life preservers with shaking fingers, trying desperately to keep their footing on decks that slant precariously toward the sea.
Still no order to proceed to the lifeboats. No statement from any member of the crew that the ship is sinking. Still, Captain Carey is optimistic, convinced that his ship can be saved.
Attention, ladies and gentlemen! Attention! There is no cause for alarm. We have called you to the upper decks merely as a precautionary measure. Every effort is being made to repair our engine. We have even taken the extreme precaution of dumping our cargo in order that we may proceed. Do not be frightened. Within the hour, we shall be back upon our course.
Ricker. Oh, there you are, Ricker. Quite a honeymoon for you folks, eh? Where is your wife?
Up there with the other women.
I wonder how long the captain thinks he can keep up this ridiculous farce. There isn't a chance the Vestris can be saved.
It does seem strange they don't get people better organized, just in case. But the captain must know what he's doing.
Oh, yes? Then why hasn't he sent out an SOS? Why hasn't he made an effort to save the lifeboats to the starboard side? Most of them are already underwater. Why hasn't he got his crew up here standing by ready for the emergency?
I don't know any of those things.
No, I guess not.
Let's at least give him a fair break. And I still think it's better to get this ship going again than to take a chance out there in the lifeboats.
Ricker, mark my words. You'll be out there before you know what's happened. Only you'll be lucky if you're in a boat. When this ship starts going under, it'll happen so fast you won't know where you are.
Nine a.m. The passengers of the Vestris still cling to the careening decks, waiting, hoping, watching the turbulent waters as they climb slowly higher along the starboard side. The port side is now so high the horizon line is completely blocked from view. 9:30 a.m. The Vestris shudders from bow to stern as more plates buckle beneath the terrific pounding of the seas. The dining saloon, the lounges, and smoking rooms are now completely underwater. 9:45 a.m. All efforts to save the Vestris are abandoned, and the captain finally admits defeat, and the first of a series of frantic appeals for assistance is finally flashed across the sea.
SS Vestris, Lamport and Holt Line, requires immediate help. Ship sinking slowly. Latitude, 37 degrees, 35 minutes north. Longitude, 71 degrees, 8 minutes west. Please answer. SS Vestris, signaling RCA station, Tuckerton, New Jersey. Please help contact ships this area. Need help at once.
Radio Corporation of America station at Tuckerton. Your message just picked up. We'll contact SS Ohio Maru and SS Prio believed in your vicinity. Stand by.
Hurry, please hurry. Ship lying on beam end. Impossible to proceed. Engines now underwater.
Your message intercepted, SS American Shipper. Coming there right away. Should be there 5 p.m.
5 p.m. will be too late. Are there no vessels this vicinity?
Apparently none less than 140 miles away. We'll send Destroyer Davis, Brooklyn Navy Yard, to your position. Also SS Santa Barbara.
Gale increasing. Wind now 80 miles per hour. Impossible continual messages much longer. Radio room now at 45 degree angle.
The frantic appeals continue. Offers of assistance flash in, but no ship is close enough to be of any real help. And here, only 250 miles away from the Virginia Capes, radio operator O'Loughlin sticks to his post. And the list of the Vestris is now so pronounced he is compelled to lie on his stomach. His feet under the water, which swirls into the room. 1:27 p.m. The power of the Vestris goes off. Using an emergency set, O'Loughlin now transmits his last appeal.
SS Vestris, Lamport and Holt Line, cannot wait any longer. Must abandon ship. Now going to lifeboat. Goodbye, WSC.
That was all. A waiting world, now apprised of the disaster, heard no more. Meanwhile, on the top deck of the ship, 4 hours of indecision, of hysteria, of unpreparedness are now coming to a climax. Only 8 lifeboats and 1 raft, a
are available to the 129 passengers and the 210 members of the crew. Martha Richter, at one end of the deck for the women and the children, desperately tries to reach her husband, but like so many others, she is pushed forward in the mad scramble. All semblance of order, of reason, has gone. Lifeboats that might have swung free, might easily have been lowered, now crash against the port side of the ship, overturning, spilling their occupants into the sea below. The screams and the cries of terror fade away as life falls into the rising sea, and the Vestris, once proud queen, turns on her side, starts her final plunge, and taking her captain and radio operator with her, in 60 seconds has disappeared from sight. History records that 67 passengers and 33 members of the crew were lost in the Vestris disaster. Some of the survivors waited for 22 hours in the shark-infested seas before they were finally picked up by the SS American Shipper. Many, like Jim and Martha Ricker, were reunited and returned to the United States. But what of the others, the 110 who were lost? Were their deaths needless? Subsequent investigation has answered that question in the affirmative and has proven once more the paradox of human history, that only through disaster and tragedy have we found the way to modern preparedness and safety in maritime travel. We have come a long way since 1928. We have remembered the lesson of the Vestris.
Heard Those Sensational Years with Quinn Ryan, another in a series of dramatic recreations of news stories that stirred the nation. Heard on tonight's program were Harry Elders, Gene Maury, Boris Aplon, Sid Elstrom, Ernest Andrews, while Captain Carey and Radio Man O'Loughlin were impersonated by Les Podwell and Arthur Hearn. The script was written by Harrison Y. Bingham with Roy W. Windsor. Original music was written by Bruce Chase and conducted by Rex Maupin. The program was produced and directed by Fred Killian. Lee Walters speaking. Your narrator for these programs is Quinn Ryan, a man who pioneered as a radio commentator and reporter, a man whose own career parallels the dramatic events of these crowded years. Next week, some amazing highlights of the great American game and some interesting notes about one of the greatest men who ever played it. Listen then for Those Sensational Years.
Now, here's a special program note. For a startling story about juvenile delinquency plus official information, hear the authentic and exciting This Is Your FBI over this station tomorrow night. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.